Hey there, and thanks for dropping back in to Myth and Magic for Modern Times, the podcast that shines a light into the subconscious, looks at stories beneath stories, the archetypes, the collective and personal myths, and the bringing forward of that which was once taboo or just unknown or less spoken about into the light of day in an approachable, grounded, safe container that is this show. My name is Jessica. I'm a healer and tarot reader, and it's so good to be back here recording this for you, and I really want to welcome and express my appreciation for those who are listening. It's been only 2 weeks since I posted the last podcast. However, for the past several weeks, I have been going through something which has spiritually and physically aged me years. I have spoken about this on my Instagram account if you follow me there at jandjuniper, and you can learn a lot more about it there. But I'll mention it here because it's important. And also, you may in this podcast hear a screeching cat in the background from time to time. You might need headphones to hear it. I'm not sure. So if you have read my posts, yes, this is the screaming cat in reference. For those who are unfamiliar, the cat is one piece of a situation that has arisen that energetically matches a situation that caused one of my original trauma-induced programs, which is called Suffer in Silence and Then You Won't Die. And I know I talk a lot about the life and death feel of conditioning from childhood, but maybe I haven't here yet. And just to fill anyone else in who's unfamiliar with it, from my perspective, when you're a child, your life is quite literally dependent on your caretaker, and you don't have the ability to take care of yourself. And you also don't have much context through which to frame situations. So when something happens in which you feel like your caretakers may no longer take care of you or aren't capable or are going to abandon you or reject you or whatever, it is a life and death situation to the child brain. And then yourself figures out a way to get through it and not be not taken care of. And then the subconscious, the involuntary systems that we all have continue to use this method, whatever it was that worked, because you're alive, throughout the rest of your life, because it worked to keep you alive in the past, and the body and all these systems are trying to keep you alive. And so one of mine is suffer in silence. I've been aware of this and working with it for a long time. I did a podcast earlier with Kathleen Callahan called The Wound is the Medicine, discussing how we both have in our natal chart the asteroid Chiron, who is the centaur in Greek mythology, who is the wounded healer. And it's placed in Gemini in our charts, which represents the throat chakra. And then how that's affected us, because both of us are both healing ourselves, both wounded, and then healing ourselves and others through our voice and our throat chakra. So I've been working on this for a while. However, these past few weeks has kind of been the grand finale. The situation arose. You can read the details about it on my Instagram, or message me, and I'm happy to talk to you about it. And it matched the circumstances that caused the original programming. And this time, instead of suffering in silence, I, as an empowered adult, said how I felt, and I set a boundary. However, before and while doing this, all of my systems tried everything they could think of to shut me down and stop me, because they were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, we've got this perfectly good program. It's called Suffer in Silence, and we know it will keep you from dying. Why are you now trying to do something differently and potentially risk death? Our involuntary systems are not as smart as we are. And in fact, in my opinion, we've been bred in ways that disconnect the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual systems. But that's another conversation. So anyway, now part of our healing work is to reintegrate all of those and ourselves. During this time, I almost had, or rather did have, a total breakdown, Well, I guess I didn't because I made it through it, even though I lost hearing in one ear, was blocking out and hyperventilating and couldn't sleep. I had just taken this trauma healing workshop and I made it through. I recognized what was happening and I had the tools to work with it and then made it through without totally falling apart. And I did something differently this time, which is speak my truth and set a boundary and then maintain it. And then I survived. And in doing so, I have drastically changed my energetic makeup. The container through which I move through life safely is totally different than it was a few weeks ago. And really, when I got through all of this and was moving into the recovery phase, the world looked, felt, tasted, smelled, sounded like a totally different place than it had been at the beginning. So it was a massive transformation in a short amount of time. And here I am now with another episode for you about names, which is cool because names, your name is your identity and yourself. And Beltane was yesterday when I'm recording this. Beltane is May 1st. And this is such a juicy, lovely gate or portal to move through. I hope it treated you really well. It's a super empowering time right now. Beltane is about honoring life and fire, which is yourself, your identity, your soul, your passion, your spirit. Beltane is also about the celebration of the sacred marriage, of divine union, blending of archetypal masculine and feminine energies, both within and without, as we are firmly leaving winter behind and moving faster and faster to the longest day of the year in which the sun is prominent. So in this episode, I share a rambling story about my own name and a ceremony that I invented to clear it energetically when I had realized a few months ago that it was carrying a lot of baggage with it. And I really encourage you, whenever you're listening to this, you've been called to this episode for a reason, I invite you to consider doing a similar ceremony or some kind of name ceremony if you haven't, especially, or if you haven't for a while. I use the elements in my ceremony in nature as much as I can, and I conveniently live next to an ocean. But wherever you are, you can use water from the sink, you can use salt or dirt, for earth. Feel free to play with it and make it your own. And please let me know if you do so, or if you have a name ritual or story that you want to share yourself. Tina LeCount Myers joins me again, award-winning and fantastic author and amazing person. And she's a great listener to my long story about my own name and the ceremony in the beginning. And then we branch off to discuss the power of names and words and family history and legacy. And the conversation actually meanders into discussing marriage, which contains the idea of the merging of identities and names. So it's just so perfect that I am publishing this the day after Beltane with its sacred marriage symbolism, even though it was recorded a while ago. And I hope you enjoy. And without further ado, here's the show. Thanks for joining me again, Tina.
I'm delighted to be here, as always. To be in your company is a treat.
Oh, thank you. I feel the same. And last time we were together, I had mispronounced your name not once, but twice.
That happens.
Which had sparked a conversation that had started on the podcast, but then continued after the podcast that I actually wanted to put on a whole new podcast because it deserves some time and attention. And it was a conversation about names. And I think maybe I'll get started by talking about my name ceremony that I went through.
Yeah, tell me a little more about that because I know you described it in brief overview, but
Yeah, it happened to that day. It was so funny. So we're sitting there talking about names and how powerful they are. And I recalled this moment that had happened a few weeks earlier. I had just recorded my very first podcast, not for myself, but with a friend. So the first time I was ever on a podcast. And she published it, and it had my full name
Right.
up there. So as you may have noticed, I go by Jessica, and I have a really cool last name, but I am really careful. I've always been really careful to keep it private. and I don't want it associated with magic. Just got that intuition at some point when I was figuring out what is my business name going to be, how am I going to present myself. I was even thinking of presenting myself as just J, like the letter J.
Yeah.
But I went, that got awkward really fast, and I decided to go with Jessica, but not include the last name for reasons which I will explain. In the past, I had blogged, and I had tried to keep my last name off of the blog that I had for about 5 years because I was a licensed professional in California, and I was doing this job with a business that I owned that was very complicated. And in this profession, the majority of other people who did this work as me were men in their 50s. And so I started working in this industry when I was 19.
Mm-hmm.
And from the get-go, I was constantly being asked, how old are you? And what do you think you're doing here? And when I started blogging when I was about 25, 26,
mm-hmm.
My fear was that when people go to look up my name, they would see this blog where I am sharing fashion tips and lifestyle and talking about my travels and talking about all these personal things. And I am this professional to them doing this job that they're expecting a 55-year-old man to show up at the door. And so there's me, and I've always looked much younger than I actually am. So I tried to keep my name off of that blog and just also to keep those identities separate. Like, my full name has to be used for this profession.
Right.
And so it's kind of claimed that. But I didn't want that to bleed over. I wanted those to be two separate things, my creative life as a photographer and a blogger, and then my professional life. So unfortunately, the name just slipped in there. I'm not even sure how, but it did slip in there. And so if you wanted to, you could find me under my full name as a blogger. And then, let's go back. Sorry, I'm like,
it gets complicated.
Where was I in this story?
Reclaiming the name.
In addition to this, I have been married briefly, didn't change my name, but was divorced, which was extremely painful and difficult. And my name is on legal documents, and my name is actually on so many thousands of documents out there, my full name.
Yes.
And I was in court almost 2 years ago because I had reported a company that was breaking the law in my industry many years back, and then the government finally was doing something about it, and they subpoenaed me to go in court and testify. And they actually found out about my blog, and my worst nightmares happened in court, where the defense attorney was trying to make me look like a frivolous young girl who just played at being a professional and didn't know what she was doing.
Yeah.
In front of the only people who I am responsible to, who could take my license away, in a court of law, all the thing I had been dreading that I tried to avoid happening happened in the worst possible way. And I survived. Also, at this time, I was locked in a conference room. Just let the record state, I was locked in a conference room with my abusive ex-boyfriend for about 45 minutes to an hour alone. And I also survived that. I didn't speak to him the whole time. I kind of set my, before I went in there, I had set my container that none of these people exist in my universe.
Right.
I'm going to get in and get out. With doing as little as I can while also taking care of myself in the best possible way and being safe and protected, and some other things. And that container was rock solid and really served me throughout this. So there have been a lot of trauma and terrible things around my name in the past, and I didn't want it associated with magic. And I do this podcast with my friend to bring it back around, and she publishes it, and it has my full name in the URL.
Oh, wow.
And I call her right away and say, can you please take this out? And she says, I didn't put it in there. I don't even know your last name. because we've always been on first name basis.
Oh.
And then I think, what the fuck is going on? Who's messing with me? Let's look into this. And so I sit and ground and center myself, and I look at my name energetically, and it's a mess. And I think, oh, it was right around New Year's too. This is actually a great opportunity to maybe do some magic around my name and clear it up.
Yeah.
Because it's been dragging a lot of shit behind it for a long time now that I was not even aware of. But no wonder I didn't want to associate with it.
Yeah.
So then I forget about that, and a couple weeks pass, and then we have our conversations about names.
Right.
Thank you. And I'm like, oh yeah, I was going to do something and clear up my name, like clean my name. And we were going back and forth and discussing some ideas of how that could work. And I think I was saying, what could hold my name? Like, should I scratch it onto a piece of wood? I need something to hold the identity and to call all of the energy to, some object. And then I'm leaving your place in the Castro, heading home, and my roommate texts me, who's, I think, 22, 23, and she's lost her ID, and she wants to borrow my ID to go out that night to a concert. And I think, my ID. Mm-hmm. Like, what better thing could there be?
Right.
And I go home, get my driver's license, which I actually want to get a whole new one after having done this. And we had been talking about how maybe I will go down to the ocean and wash it in ocean water. And so I get a container, some Tupperware, and I walk to the ocean, which I can do from my old house. Can't really do from here, but that's okay.
A little bit of a longer walk.
Yeah, I could do it from here. You're right. So I walk to the ocean, and I get down there, and I get some salt water and my container, and I realize, actually, this is going to be a much bigger thing. And I spoke to the West. High West, hello ocean, thank you for all you do, thank you for your purification and the way you cleanse and clear, thank you ocean for the negative ions that you release and how you dredge things up and clean them and bring them up and out and all of the work that you do. And then I do this very ceremonially, which it was a ceremony, but just turned into a bigger one than I thought, and clear it with the West and with salt water.
Mm-hmm.
And then I shake it out and I walk back up the hill to where I'm, there's this overlook that I would always hike to, and I bury it in the earth. And I also speak to the earth and to the north, to earth, the mother, and to the ancestors and to everything that the north holds, and bury it in the dirt for a little while. Sit and breathe for a minute. Take it out, and then again with the east. And it was a windy day, it was helpful by the ocean, and I spoke to the east and air and just kind of waved it in the air as I was walking around. And then I go back home, where I take a lighter and complete it with south and fire. And then I think I've used cedar and sage, first sage, then cedar. But I'm not sure, but I did use some kind of smudging items, and asked spirit to clear it up. And before I had begun, I had sat with the ID card and set my intentions that this card would magnetize and would call in all energy that has ever been associated with my full name, stated as, you know, I was stated my name. It will attach itself to this card for the purpose of it being cleaned out, cleared out, and taken care of in all directions, in all dimensions, throughout all time and space. And I just was kind of coming up with it on the spot, and then I handed this wet dirty ID card over to my roommate and said, go have fun tonight. And I was kind of hoping, wondering if it would disappear into the ether while she was out and about. But she returned it back to me.
Right.
So I still have my ID card, but I'm going to order a new one.
Yeah. Get some new energy in it.
Yeah. Get a new picture.
Yeah.
I hate my picture.
We always hate our pictures in those things. It's just designed to frustrate.
This one, I didn't realize that they were going to take a new picture. I think it was when I turned 30, and they said, you have to go in. And I was like, oh, I have to go in this time. Why? And I had some 8 a.m. or 7 a.m. appointment at the DMV. And so I roll in with no makeup on and my hair is a mess. And then they say, now go take your picture. And I was like, no, no. And it's super cropped close.
I know.
My face fills the frame. It couldn't even be back. It couldn't give me some like background.
Yeah.
You know? It's it's terrible. So then I was texting you about it, but I wanted us to meet again and continue our conversation about names. I think there's so much there. And you had said that you were studying
and
your family names
when
at
you
the
mentioned
time.
It earlier, and I was like, what was I talking about? I don't even remember.
Right.
But I do remember what it was, and it has to do with family names, and it has to do with my paternal side and the fact that generationally they named the kids, like, there's Margaret's and Ann's in two different generations, or Melissa's and Martha's. So there's little Melissa and big Melissa and little Martha and big Martha, but they don't run in the same, they're not like mother daughter.
They're like every other one.
They're mother sister niece,
yeah,
mother niece combinations. And you're trying to figure out who are we talking about here? But when I was in thinking about that, I realized, you know, there's that legacy of being named after somebody and what that holds. And I'm wondering about, like, energetically holding energy. Like, my father was named after his father, although he's not a junior. And I wonder how much of my dad, he was holding my grandfather, that energy, and processing it because of that shared name. I don't know. I mean, maybe it gives people like a real sense of grounding and like, I am the fourth or the, you know, third or fourth in this legacy. But maybe that, like what you said, that name holds, you're trailing a whole lot of baggage.
Yeah.
Potentially. And I don't know if that happens with owning that name.
Generationally. That's fascinating. I hadn't thought about that, but I'm aware that I'm doing so much, what do we call it, ancestral healing, and that I, through my own DNA, I am carrying all of the traumas and all of the woundings of everybody who's come before me, who hasn't done the work on it. And it's interesting that you mentioned this. It made me think that my middle name is my grandmother's middle name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the only... that's the only thing that I have. My mom wanted to name me Laura, but then at the last, and I was almost a Laura, but then at the last minute, my dad decided to name me Jessica.
Right.
And I asked him why, and he couldn't give me a straight answer, but somehow I had randomly come across the fact that Dune had just been released.
Yeah.
Like right before I was born.
Oh.
And my dad is a huge sci-fi.
Oh, interesting.
Lover.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, oh, I bet he just went to that movie and with Lady Jessica. And then I was born a couple days later, and he's like,
oh, interesting.
We're naming her this now.
Yeah, I wonder how many Daenerys's there are out in the world now as a result of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Because people are inspired by, you know, pop culture and... And this, just interesting to see this, you know... trends, you know, for a while it was Tiffany and Brandy, and you know, that kind of name was coming out of pop culture as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Ashley, all those.
Well, Jessica was the most popular name in 1985. I don't think that everybody went and saw Dune, so I don't know. I don't know, right. But there is a collective consciousness too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I don't share a name with any of my forebearers at all.
My mom had gotten the name Laura from a book, actually. So we were talking about pop culture, and that's not really pop culture, but it is. It's interesting where names come from. So if my theory is correct and I was named after Lady Jessica, I was actually named after someone from a book.
Yeah.
My dad just had the last say in which character.
Which character it was.
It was.
Interesting. Yeah. And, that's fascinating.
So my middle name is Marie, named after my grandmother.
As is mine. The most popular middle name, I think, ever, besides Anne, maybe, in a certain...
Right?
In a certain culture.
There's so many Maries. Genre. So I never placed that much attention on it, but it is the only segment that is named after one specific person other than my last name, which is my dad's side of the family. And she has now passed away. And I guess I can reveal this since none of you know who I am. After she passed away, we found out that the man that my mom thought was her father was not actually her father. Mm-hmm. And it had been somebody else.
Yeah.
And it actually feels like a very tragic story where she had fallen, from what we can piece together, mm-hmm. because she didn't tell anyone the full story.
Yeah,
she fell in love with somebody, and then I guess he ran away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she had already been friends with this guy who she married and then had two other kids with,
mm-hmm.
my aunt and uncle, and maybe he knew and was like helping her out and they were kind of friendly, or I don't really know what was going on, but it's interesting thinking about it now. When I learned the story, I thought, wow, so she went and had a good time and fell in love, and then her message that she got was, this is wrong and you should be ashamed and like you've done the wrong thing and now you're being punished. And she never recovered from that. Like after she divorced the man that she married,
mm-hmm.
she never had another relationship.
Yeah.
And was alone. And there is so much familial trauma around love.
Yeah.
That I know that I'm carrying. And so I am inspired to now sit and look at that more with my grandma and just see if there's anything there. I don't feel like it's that potent for me.
Yeah.
But it is interesting.
Yeah, it's very good. It hits you really deep in the heart about that lesson, and that it's attached to love, and that's wrong somehow. And
yeah, that's so sad. And yeah, that structure existed.
Yeah, and I think it's probably very common, particularly at a certain point in time, in many cultures, mm-hmm. and continues to be.
It continues to be. We've been bred to be this certain way for thousands of years. I was just thinking about this the other day, and it's not, and we have actually been actively changing it probably throughout those whole thousands of years, but we're changing so fast right now, and you can't change your breeding in two generations. And there are still, like, even though it's in the culture that, like, it's okay to have sex, we can have safe sex, like, you could get pregnant and you have options, and it doesn't mean that you're now, like, your life is ruined and you can never have a good time and experience love with somebody again. But yet that is absolutely still happening, and it's still a sub-story, or just an actual thing that happens, even though we're trying to change that in the collective.
Yeah, the change is becoming faster and faster, but there's still these lingering kind of points, issues, tensions that we're bringing through it. When you mentioned, like, I was thinking about it because we had talked earlier about last names, and particularly, as marriage, because things are changing, people,
mm-hmm.
do you keep the last name, do you not keep the last name, you keep your own name, take his name, combine your names.
Yeah.
Everybody has
no good solution for it, really, because if you combine the names, you just keep combining names.
I know. It's sort of interesting. I mean, I kept my name, and only because, well, first of all, this is my name. This is my identity. I identify with our name. We identify, or at least I identify with my name. This is mm-hmm. who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So to take on somebody else's name felt like, well, that's not me.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that my husband's last name is a lovely name, but when you put my first name and his last name together, it really just doesn't work for me as my personality.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother changed her name 3 times.
Yeah.
She was married twice.
3 completely different names?
In essence, like, she was born with one name. She was named after her aunt, and she never liked that name. So she, when she was living in Finland, she went by her middle name. And then she got married, and she took his name, his last name. But her middle name is very hard for most people to pronounce. I think only the Finns can really pronounce it. And so she kind of, so when she was married to the first gentleman, she took the initial and made it into a name. So her name is Gurliki. And so she took the K and said, became K.
This is almost what I did.
Right. She became Kay, K-A-Y. Right. And then they're divorced and she remarried and she took my father's last name. And we had, at some point, I must have been a teenager or something. And we had a very kind of clear discussion about, you know, my mother would say things like, you know, and she always said, you know, Tina. That's how, like, she would start a sentence or a conversation with me. You know, Tina, you can always change your name if it doesn't work for you. And I'm like, but
can I?
But can I? Really? Like, really, can I change my name? And it turns out, no, not really. Like, I have a dear friend who, I'm not sure if you met her or not, but anyways, they have a child who at the time was sort of non-binary, decided they were non-binary, and they wanted to change the name, so they chose a new name for themselves. And I thought, wow, that's like, oh yeah, and embracing it, and it works for that person. But for me, I kind of been like, oh, why couldn't I have been called so-and-so? But I would never go and choose to be called, like, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
Why didn't you name me something gorgeous like Isabel or something? But I would never go and change my name. This is me. This is my identity.
I have also disliked my name, and I really liked being in classes where, like, foreign language classes where you got to choose new names. And I've really disliked it at different times. But I also would never be able to choose a different one for me. And it is so much to pick one word that encapsulates your entire identity.
Mm-hmm.
I could never do that. I can't. I have a hard time defining myself in whenever I have to, like, fill out even a paragraph on Instagram. I'm like, how do I sum myself up in a paragraph?
Right.
I've given, like, 5 questions. I'm like, how do I do this in 5 questions? What kind of music do you like? Like, all music.
Kinds?
Like, so much music. So I really have a hard time narrowing things down, and it would be really hard to do that, which is why I haven't. And I also have not changed my last name when I was married for 5 minutes a million years ago in a different lifetime.
Yeah.
I think it was one day in, and somebody called me by my full name, and I thought, yeah, that's actually who I am. And I just assumed that I would change my last name because everybody does, especially back then, especially in the very conservative culture I was growing up in, religious culture. But I realized that I couldn't. This is who I am now, whether I like it or not. Like, this is my name.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I came into this world with this name that, you know, my parents chose for me, or whatever guiding influence in there, whether it was conscious or unconscious. And this is it, you know. And there's all kinds of derivation, like, you know, you get nicknames, all different kinds of nicknames. Although mine, I always had an issue with, because my name is just Tina, and there's a whole thing about, are you a real Tina,
or are you a Christina?
And it's like, okay. And it's like,
interesting,
they say, are you a real Tina? And I'm like, for the last number of decades, yes, I feel very real. But you know, there was a conscious choice there, having to do with nicknames. My father didn't want me to have a nickname, and he ended up being the first one to give me a nickname. But
yeah, how do you have a nickname for Tina?
He called me Tinita. Little Tina.
Oh.
Which, leads into all the other nicknames, which are all very diminutive, and I am not a diminutive person. Like, they're teeny and like, these have been the nicknames, teeny and tiny, and teenita, and teenster, and the teenmeister, and like, they're always like little tiny things, and I'm, you know, 5'10". So I was like, I needed a bigger name.
Yeah.
But nicknames come and they stay sometimes. Sometimes you can get them to go away, but sometimes they stick.
I feel like I haven't, I don't think that I've actually mentioned being married on this podcast before or in any of my social media. And I want to revisit that for just a minute and elaborate on it, because I think it actually doesn't do it justice to reference it in the really dismissive way that I did.
Yeah.
But it I do that because it did not actually feel like a marriage to me. I was literally moving in with my first boyfriend, and this is how I could do it without, in my view at the time, ruining everyone's lives.
Right.
Because I did grow up in that extremely conservative family and religious structure, and everybody got married when they were 18, 19, 20, so that they could have sex and be free and move on with their lives.
Right.
And I really wanted to get out of my family house.
Yeah.
And so I did so. And I had a really happy relationship, a fairly happy relationship with this guy who was a friend. It was very friendly. It was not romantic. It was very contractual. It was very, like, medieval.
Yeah.
And then I had this awakening and realized that I had to get out of there.
Yeah.
He was emotionally neglectful, which is better than
abusive.
Being abusive, which is the next relationship I got into. So, yeah, it was something I had to go through. And as I was actually starting this business and growing, I was expanding a lot. And I am a fast learner, and I am constantly transforming. And he was not capable of doing that. And it had been a friendship to begin with. And even though I was not clear within myself about that, but then I became clear and I left it, and I had no support from my family. So it was very difficult.
Sure.
And I do feel, while I feel like I haven't actually been married and that I didn't know what I was getting into, and that if I were to get quote unquote married ever again, it would be a very different conscious commitment.
Yeah.
But I do feel like I've been divorced twice now, because I've had really terrible separations, so I can really empathize with people who are going through that, just to go back and expand a little bit.
I've had long-term relationships with friends and lived with them and call it a divorce when we had to part ways, because it's dramatic. It's very dramatic. It's interesting that you say, like, you said something like, oh, it kind of was a breezy attitude towards the dismissive attitude and being at a young age. And it's hard at a very young age to figure out strategies. And so you try your best.
Thank
you. Try your best to get where you feel like you need to go with the system that you're trying to operate in, and particularly as a young person who has a family that or they want to be part of their family. They don't, you know, you're trying to make it work with this structure.
Within the structures that I was in, within all the containers that I was in, that was the best option at the time.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people face those same constraints and are trying to make those decisions with similar constraints. So it is a very important topic to kind of put out there that, you know, there may be ways that people would say, oh, you know, you're too young to know what you're doing, or, oh, you're only married for a short amount of time and, you know, you didn't think about it.
I don't want to dismiss it in that way.
And, you know, neither one of those cases are necessarily true to the whole, a whole construct that you were trying to work within, you know.
Thank you, Tina.
That's really hard. I mean, I didn't get married until much later in life, and when I did, it was sort of like, okay, you know, I was like, when I got asked to get married, I'm like, why not? You know, like, I met you once, and that was a month ago, but yeah, sure, let's get married.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it wasn't necessarily love at first sight. It wasn't sort of like, this is the man or the woman for me. Mm-hmm. It was sort of like, yeah, no, this might work. This model might work. And, you know, I figure I had a 50-50 shot at it. You know, I couldn't be any worse than my parents' marriage, bless their hearts. Mm-hmm. So I figure, why not? And it's kind of worked out. You know, we're almost 20 years in now. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, people also make impulsive decisions or that are not youthfully oriented. So, and I certainly haven't regretted that leap, but it's also kind of mostly worked out.
Yeah. And marriage can be a really great container for a beautiful thing that you co-create with somebody. It just isn't always used that way.
Yeah, no. But, you know, it gets used the way it needs to be used for any number of reasons. Power dynamics, socioeconomic survival, you know, there's a lot attached to it beyond just the beauty of finding a person who's the love of your life, or even the person from whom is your soulmate, which is not, I don't think of soulmate as, you know, it's not an easy, soulmates are not, for me, a romantic idea. It's somebody you're working out a lot of who you are, who they are together. And that can be beautiful, but it doesn't necessarily come with stars and chocolate.
No. Having had several soulmates, I can testify to that. I consider my friend Matilda, who is our mutual friend, is definitely a soulmate, and we have a soul contract because that woman has done so much for me and is the reason why I'm here today back in San Francisco doing what I'm doing, making this podcast. Like, she is an example of a soulmate in a relationship that continues to expand and grow. And then I meet people along the way where I'm like, oh, you're a soulmate. And sometimes it's just, I met a lot of soulmates while I was traveling.
Yeah.
On my big road trip last year, I was traveling for 7 months, and sometimes I hung out with them for a couple days or a week, and then we moved on, but we did always reflect interesting things to each other.
Yeah.
I think they were all women. And then I've had soulmate relationships that have been awful. In some way or other, probably both of those men that I was in long-term relationships with were a soulmate. That was probably a contract that we had agreed on that they would be the ways that they were.
So I
could learn the lessons I needed to learn.
Yeah, I know. So it's like, I think in the common parlance, soulmate has this sort of, you know, romantic gleam to it, but it... In a spiritual,
metaphysical way, like the nuts and bolts of soulmate just means.
Yeah.
From what I understand, somebody who's cut from the same, like, soul cloth as you, and you have a contract with them to show up in each other's life at some point for some extent of time to do some kind of work together.
Yeah. And bless the people who can actually look at it at the end of a relationship and be like, oh, that's what that was at the same time or ever, you know, like, you know, sometimes it's very clear to one person or the other, like, oh, that's what this was. But it's amazing when two individuals can come to that same place at the same time at the very end of it and be like, oh, this is what this was. Thank you. Yeah. Even though there may have been acrimony and struggle and strife and all that stuff. Oh, yeah. It happens. So
you're describing a very evolved human being. It's
really evolved. I don't know many. I mean, I know many evolved human beings. I don't know if that. I don't. Sort of like that. What does that look like? I don't know.
Well, I think marriage is another word that I would love to do away with or have some really radical transformation in our collective consciousness. My abusive ex, the second one, second of my two long-term relationships, he was constantly saying that we should get married.
Yeah.
he never really, like, actually proposed to me. Mm-hmm. He would do it in these very weird ways where he was like, what are you doing Tuesday? Like, the courthouse is open. And it was always really weird. And he started telling people that we were married from, like, the first month.
Mm, interesting.
That I met him. And I told him that I wasn't okay with that. And he didn't listen to me because I didn't know how to hold up boundaries. And he was designed to show me that. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I didn't get married to him. Actually, I don't know if it would have been worse, the separation, when he locked me out of the house and tried to take almost everything and mm-hmm. All my money, if I had had the wherewithal to get a what's it called,
a restraining order. No, sorry.
Also that, but the document that you sign before you get married.
Oh, prenuptial agreement.
If I had been smart enough to get a prenup, uh-huh. maybe the separation would have actually gone easier mm. with a crazy person, but maybe not.
Maybe not.
While he was constantly needling me and just saying that we were married and mm-hmm. doing these things, I told him, you know, I've been there and I've done that and I don't want to get married. And I don't even like calling you my boyfriend because that sounds weird because we are in this partnership and partner also sounds weird. I feel less weird about partner now, but mm-hmm. at the time it was more of a new word for me.
Yeah.
And it was just, it felt awkward to say.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of limits it. The connotation is changing definitely because yeah. partnership also extends to a legal partnership or mm-hmm. a business partnership. So it can be very, you know, not romantic.
Yeah, but I had thought a lot at the time about how much I just didn't like the word marriage or the history of it, and wished that there was something else that you could do that would signify mm. I'm in a serious relationship and I want the world to know it.
Right. Yeah, isn't that power in words, mm-hmm. power in words and how they define and constrain and or give you freedom. Mm-hmm. Marriage is definitely one of those loaded ones.
Well, speaking of power and words, thanks so much for meeting me for this podcast and sharing some powerful words with me.
As always, it's a delight to go off on tangents as they arise because they're actually related in some way to whatever the intent was that was supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm. I believe that too.
Love to be here.
Cheers.
Cheers.